To help support this podcast
and get exclusive bonus content and rewards,
make a monthly pledge at
patreon.com/universebox.
And remember to think outside.
And where is the Batman? He's at home watching his sights.
Welcome to Legends of Gotham, where we talk about Fox's hit series Gotham, set in the world of Batman. Although not tonight, we're talking the Batman film.
It's still in Gotham, Meeks. And I'm Anne-Marie DeSimone.
And that was more Mark Hamill's Joker than Jack Nicholson's Joker.
Oh, it was
Joker.
All over the place.
But
you're
it was
trying.
A Jack Nicholson line, so it was okay. We were doing some rehearsal beforehand. Like, I was trying to do Jack Nicholson and Christian Slater going into Jack Nicholson. And then I just went and did Mark Hamill instead. You know, I was trying to garner some wisdom from our guest tonight because he's an actor. He's currently filming The 100. He's also been on Arrow, Once Upon a Time, a bunch of other stuff that I don't have up here because I didn't know the IMDb.
Way to be prepared. Way to be prepared.
Yes. But Jared Joseph, how are you doing, Jared?
I'm good, man. I think you just did the smorgasbord of Jokers. That was really good.
Yeah, it kind of bled from one to the other a little bit. So.
Yeah. I'm good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thank you for joining us. Great to have you on. We met Jared online through our Greetings from Storybrooke Once Upon a Time podcast because he played Billy the Mechanic / Gus Gus over there.
Gus Gus! Sorry, you probably hate it.
But basically, we had a long-running joke, pour one out for Gus Gus, because your character had a horrible death on that show. Absolutely horrible. It got ripped in half, I believe.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, we got so into it. We were like, yes, we're going to root for that guy. And the next episode, he was ripped in half. We were like, there went that plan.
Yes.
There went that plan. So.
Yeah, but
well, it's just as much a surprise to me.
You were like, oh, I went in to shoot, and then I turned on the episode. Oh, I'm dead. Oh.
More or less, but I was happy to be there.
Oh, no.
Nice. And I just
realized... Well, you get the episodes, like 1 week before you go and kind of thing, you know.
Right.
I never knew when I was going to be back on the show, so it was cool, yeah.
Yeah, but since we'd become so friendly over there... Through greetings and everything, you reached out to me a couple months ago and you were like, hey, you guys do a show about Gotham. I love Batman. I should come on sometime and talk Batman with you guys. And so we finally worked it out. And tonight we're going to be discussing Batman 89, Tim Burton's Batman, the classic starring Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson, and the guy who played Joe. I forget what his name was. No one knows what his name was. But we figured... You know, we always start these with a riddling, rhyming episode summary, and tonight's no different, even though we're not actually talking Gotham. And the Riddler's not in this
not
one.
Not even in it. Not even thought of.
But, Amory, you want to go ahead and take it away, and then we'll get started in our discussion?
Okay. Who killed the parents of Gotham's protector? Jack Napier's his name. He's a clownish specter. Can Batman stop his villainous schemes? Yes, if he buys stock in Mr. Clean. Can the Bat-love... Alfred says yes. Will Bruce give up his cowl for the dress? Is this the story where the Dark Knight began? Forget about Nolan. We're talking Batman.
Batman. Batman. Or Bat Dance, as the prince may say.
I don't even want to go there.
But Amory, I guess we like to get an idea of what you thought about it overall when we start the conversation. And you've never seen it before.
I have, but it was probably in like 93 or
you've never cared about it before.
I have never cared about it before. And right now I'm scared of the 80s and I don't want them to come back like that. It was terrifying. It was so scary. The clothes, the cameras, the no cell phones. I just can't handle
it. But I, as someone who actually knows the Bat mythos mainly from Gotham,
yes.
What did you think about it?
Besides
the 80s hate.
Besides my 80s hate, not bad. I feel like they completed the Joker story, but they didn't complete any of the other stories.
Yeah.
I feel there was a lot going, we're going to throw this out, see if we ran out of time. We're just going to let it bounce in the air.
No, Jack Nicholson has too much pull. It's just going to be about his
character. It's like, here, we've got this guy. He's pretty well known. People like him. We're going to use him.
Well, I know a lot of people have said that this movie really should have been called The Joker in a lot of ways.
Yes.
But Jared, let's go to you next. What's your history with this movie? And obviously you like it because you suggested we watch it, but what's your your history? Like, when was the first time you saw Batman?
The same week release in 89.
Oh, did you? You went to the theater and everything for it.
Yeah, with mom. But I had spent like maybe a year or two before that just in, you know, in a kindergarten or daycare dressing up as Batman every single day, right?
Nice.
So, he was close to me, and then the film came out. I remember there was so much buzz around it, you know, when Jack was attached and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That they did like the Entertainment Tonight 30-second snippet, and I remember all that stuff, you know. I was really young. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, old enough to resonate, for it to resonate with me, but it was the first movie that I ever had the soundtrack for, first movie I ever had action figures for, wanted action figures for, you know, and posters and whatnot. It's that movie for me, you know. I know for a lot of people it's Star Wars and maybe, you know, whatever, but this is mine, so it's nice. Super close to me.
Yeah, it was big back then, too. They call it Batmania, I think. You know, just any product you could think of had Batman on it. You know, you could get bread punched out in the shape
Batman
of bats.
Oh, Batman bread, perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Bat bread, they called it. And you mentioned the soundtrack too. I know Anne-Marie's didn't quite like it as much, but yeah, a great soundtrack from Prince. Although
awful.
There was some like a mega mix on there that was like I think a couple of the songs like mixed up together, and it just like had like a hook of like Vicky Vale. I remember
that's right.
That very clearly. No, but the more
upbeat stuff wasn't maybe appropriate for the film.
Mm-hmm.
It was great cross marketing for the time. We know what they were trying to do.
Right.
But there were a couple of songs on there that were real, like Scandalous, Princess Scandalous for the Vicky and mm-hmm. Bruce characters, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, it had some heart, it had some, you know, relevance, but a lot of it was kind of like, oh, you made a Batman song.
Yeah, and you know. Me personally, like, I really liked the video for Bat Dance, cause they had, like, all the backup dancers. They were dressed up as Batman
Joker.
And the Joker. Yeah, here, I'm gonna show our watchers over on YouTube at live.universebox.com just a couple. Yeah, Prince had, like, he had kind of, like, the two-face thing going on where half of him was the Joker and half of him was Batman.
That's how he dresses on a Thursday. Like, that's normal for him.
That is his Thursday outfit. That's completely accurate. But yeah, all sorts of good stuff. Yeah, I was really young when I originally saw it too. I was I have the music on here. But no, when I saw it too, I can't remember how old. Well, 89, so I was like 7, I think.
Yeah,
and I was at my my aunt and uncle's, and the grown-ups were upstairs, like you know, talking around the kitchen table with coffee or something like that. And I noticed they had Batman there, and my mom wouldn't take me to see it. So I like snuck the VHS tape and snuck it in and watched it. And I believe they came in right there and caught me watching it right there at that last scene where we were talking before the show, Anne-Marie.
Mm-hmm.
Vicky does the trick so Batman can punch the Joker. You know, she kind of goes down. So I got in a little bit of trouble.
I can see that. But really, at 7, did you have any idea what?
No,
you didn't get it.
I thought she was tying a shoe. That's all. Okay, so we have. Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, well, I guess we'll go ahead and get started in talking about the individual characters here overall. We'll start with Bruce and Batman. Jerry, what did you think of Michael Keaton's performance in this one?
Well, I can answer it as the guy I am today, or the kid that watched it when I was young.
I'd say answer it as the second first and the first second.
Be the kid, then the adult. Yeah.
Okay, I look back on it now. Who's charisma? His Bruce was a charismatic, real dude, a millionaire without asking for it. You know, I really like that approach. You know, in the other versions, it's kind of been stiff. It's been the guy in a suit that's, you know, the playboy. This wasn't really a playboy. This is kind of a guy who got it kind of bestowed upon him and had to just acclimate. So I always could see, oh, if I grew up to be that guy in any capacity and I just put on that suit, then, you know, that's just what it is. That's why I thought the juxtaposition between the two was really, really good in that regard. But, you know, it was the 80s and, you know, the Tom Hanks of the world and them were really huge at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if maybe he would have been cast later, do you know what I mean? But I was a huge fan of his Bruce because we talk about Bruce being just a real dude all the time, but I think his was the most real.
Yeah, yeah, I think there was a lot of controversy though, because I believe that his big movie before this one was, well, I think he'd done Beetlejuice at that point maybe, but Mr. Mom. So he was known for more of like the big broad comedies and everything like that.
Huh.
But you know, it's interesting what you say, because his Bruce Wayne, you know, a lot of Bruce Wayne portrayals, like Christian Bale, for example, or even some more in this series of movies, the Bruce Wayne is more. It's like a mask for Batman, where in this one it feels almost like Bruce Wayne is a part of Batman's personality, you know, right. Like it's not a mask he puts on, it's just a, you know, a part he puts away when he puts on the suit. A lot of time he feels like a real guy when he's acting as Bruce, a lot mm-hmm. more than I'd think Christian Bale or anything like that.
Yeah, I agree 1,000% with that, actually, if you think about it. I mean, he wasn't the most... He wasn't broad. He wasn't huge, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can go psychological, like all psychological as you want on it. But when he put on the suit, he was a man. Whereas the other guy looks like a guy that would bump his head, or, you know, if you saw the soup mm-hmm. scene, you know, stuff like that. And he just, mm-hmm. yeah, it was his. I know exactly what you mean, though. I can't articulate it. Exactly
no, that's fine. Something else that kind of – the thing that really stuck out to me about his portrayal was he's just – a lot of times as Bruce Wayne, he's very aloof and goofy. But he also has
– Exactly.
He has this dark side that he can kind of switch on when he needs to, like the scene with the fire poker.
Yes! Oh, my gosh. Crazy, I was just like, whoa.
Crazy.
Yeah. Like, she had to be so mm-hmm. scared too, because it was like, this is not the person that I've at all talked to.
Yeah, and he just has those moments of intensity. Another one I can think of is when the Joker makes his first big appearance in downtown Gotham at that press conference thing. Mm-hmm. Vicky's been stalking Bruce Wayne yeah. and everything. Once they start shooting people, he just gets this look on his face like, I would not want to cross that guy in a dark alley. I know that's very inappropriate for
very
Batman.
Inappropriate.
But I also thought it was – I thought, you know, like you said, Jared, that there was a lot of subtlety in his performance. And I remembered it mm-hmm. – I remembered it being much bigger and much goofier on the rewatch. I think it was as dramatic as anything he did and as nuanced as anything he did in the more recent Birdman, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I can see that.
You know, I'm with you, man. And I don't mean to knock any other takes on Bruce. But like you said, if you think about it, he's got the goof. And he's got the guy who's locked in his head and – you know, Kelly's got some stuff going on. And then you got this. You had like three different versions of this guy where I feel like you maybe get one and a half in the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get serious Bruce who's, you know, parading around Gotham as this guy for everybody, and then he's Batman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was just a fun take on it, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Okay, Anne-Marie, what did you think about this version of Bruce Wayne? I mean, you're familiar with young David from
yeah,
Gotham.
I am. I mean, I'm familiar with enough from watching cartoons with the kids and stuff like that.
Yeah,
but
don't get it twisted or anything. Emery's seen like The Dark Knight.
I've seen entirely too much at this point. It's getting crazy. But why does nobody know who he is? Like, he seems unknown. No one can explain his story to Vicky. Like, she's like, what is his deal? Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't know. He just has this big mansion and has parties that everyone goes to. What? No. He's rich. He's famous. They own half the city. Like, but in this version, you know, his dad was a doctor and not a businessman, mm-hmm. which obviously he's like reconstructing everyone's face in all of yeah. the world to have that mansion.
I will say that's comics accurate.
Accurate yeah. to have that gigantic house and be a doctor and no one knows him.
Well, basically what it is Thomas kind of, he's a doctor and then he starts branching out. To a lot of philanthropy and then, you know, a big practice, and he has a big building in downtown Gotham and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it feels like none of that really mm-hmm. happens in this.
Well, it's like, I kind of think of it as, we just moved to Orlando, so we don't know a lot about this area, but think about Atlanta, where we used to live. Did we know, like, the big millionaires in Atlanta, really? Did we know of them? Because we weren't
part of
that.
She was asking a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she wasn't asking Joe Schmo off the street.
She was asking Arliss, the reporter.
She was asking a guy who probably should know.
She was, yeah.
Yeah.
You know what, though? Your original point was that the movie kind of passed a lot of stuff, though. Right?
Yes.
You know, it kind of jumped right into it. So, yeah. Like, we kind of chalk some of it up to being, okay, just fast-track this. He's rich. This is what's happening. They don't know him, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It, you know, it could be more of that than it is, you know, negligence.
I know, but it was a two plus hour movie. Like, they could have taken, like, I don't know. It just felt like having to explain that nobody, that they didn't have a file on him and that they didn't know was harder than being like, oh yeah, this happened.
Well, you also have to keep in mind, you know, this movie wasn't made to be an exact representation of the Batman story. This was made, it was made as a vehicle for Tim Burton's vision of Batman.
Okay.
So
I blame Tim Burton.
Tim Burton wanted to get to the really cool shots, the really well-composed shots with the spirals and stuff.
Yeah, that's what he wanted.
He didn't want to waste time on you know, keeping everything super accurate.
Okay, fine.
But it, past that, you liked his portrayal and everything?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I thought it was really good. It was funny to see him, like, I mean, I guess he's always so quiet. But then, like, definitely the goofy stuff and pretending, you know, I don't know who Bruce Wayne is. I don't, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, he's good, you know.
I loved it. You know, people talk about other portrayals and say that, you know, they knocked the Bruce thing out of the park. But I found them all to be kind of snoozers, you know. Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to the Batfleck.
Yes,
definitely. So much. I think it's going to be amazing.
We'll discuss that later, but that's what I can't wait to see.
Yeah, out of the other Batman films, and again, it's been a while since I've seen them, but the only moment that I think really kind of touched Keaton's kind of aloofness as Bruce Wayne was the one scene in, I think it was Dark Knight, with Christian Bale and the two models in the fountain and everything like that. Although, again, as soon as he sent those two models off, he was back to being Batman.
Right.
One issue go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that was about as close as you got away from, you know, the two versions of the guy. And it was nice, and even buying the hotel so that you can kind of defer so that people think he's a snob and he's in his hair so there's less attention on him. And he's just a playboy dumb little, you know, and it deflects more attention away from him. I thought that was great, too.
One thing I just wanted to point out before we move on to the next character is that, did you notice that anytime Bruce was sitting in front of the Bat computer, he had glasses on? Did he need glasses as Batman, or did he just kind of like, I'll kind of guesstimate where things are?
I think he guesstimated where things were, because he had them on like half the time as Bruce. Because
He needed stonewashed denim and black turtleneck to be Bruce, or else he wouldn't be Bruce.
You know, if they had panned that shot back a little farther, you would have seen, like, on the right side, a row of bat suits, on the left side, a row of turtlenecks.
That's right.
He eventually donated them all to Steve Jobs a few years later, so it was good.
No, I think they got to Jerry Seinfeld for the 90s first.
Yeah, they kind of passed through Seinfeld over to Jobs. Okay,
That's right. So
let's see here. Next character is, the Joker. And, I mean, this is basically his origin story, which, depending on who you ask, is a good thing or a bad thing.
Right.
But what did you think of Jack Nicholson's Joker overall, Jared?
At the time, I knew no better.
Right.
You know, granted, I had seen the Adam West one. Actually, I was pretty much obsessed with that one as well. My mom would attest to that. But, you know, people talk about this movie now, and they bring up camp, and they bring up all this stuff, but until 2005, this was the darkest thing we ever seen, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So for me, I was like, this guy is polarizing. He's scary. He's a boogeyman. You know, I think they did a great job creating a boogeyman.
Oh, yeah. I could see that.
Oh, definitely.
At the time, though.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I got more perspective and I see it differently.
Mm-hmm.
But for the relevance of the time and what they were going for, I don't know what else they could have done, man.
Yeah. One thing that I kind of found interesting, and this was actually one of my points, so yeah, it leads right into it, was just that, it's kind of, because, you know, when I think back on Batman before rewatching it last night, I think, you know, Jack Nicholson is Jack Nicholson as the Joker, and he, you know, puts his identity on it and makes it all his own, kind of like Heath Ledger did. But then going back and watching it, you can totally see that the last live-action version of the Joker we had was Cesar Romero, and you can see a lot of the influence that Jack Nicholson took from that portrayal, like, especially like kind of like the last and little hoo-hoos and stuff like that.
Well, I'm sure it was coming from him and Tim Burton. Because, I mean, he's the one, you know, helping to set up that character, too. And so I think that collaboration sort of did that.
I think they married Caesar version with The Shining, with just Jack's natural charm. You know what I mean?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't hire Jack Nicholson and expect Jack to get away from Jack. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's not much you can do. You're getting Jack.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Don't buy Jack.
This is a – probably. I don't know. Up until that point, this was probably one of the most comedic roles he had ever done, too. I mean, obviously, there are points where it's completely disturbing, but there's a lot of jokes. It's the Joker, right?
Oh, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, because up until this point, he was kind of like Witches of Eastwick, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, Jack Nicholson, and then he became Joker Jack Nicholson, making money off all the Batman toys Jack Nicholson.
Then getting to do whatever the heck he wanted, Jack Nicholson. Yeah.
Getting top billing ahead of Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. As we mentioned before, it totally, it's basically the Joker's movie. Yeah. One of the things that I thought was very interesting and very much like the comic book Joker was kind of how he gets fixated and obsessed with art as a medium for his murder. Because the Joker does that all the time in the comics, like for whatever Joker story is going on, he'll just get fixated on some sort of like weird motif like that. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, I'm going to do a lot of crimes as a cowboy or, you know, based around television or something like that. And I just thought that was very Joker like to have him kind of just fixate on art and kind of art is murder and stuff like that. One other thing that I did notice is just that outside of really his kind of taking over of the local mob and everything, we never really see the Joker commit too much like violence directly. It mostly like routes out through his henchmen, and obviously in the last fight scene,
there's a little
some punches
there
are thrown, but
you know, the joy buzzer of death and stuff.
You know, if you knew the Joker from you know, the best Joker story that had come out up until this movie came out, The Killing Joke, some might say the best Joker story ever. You know, he's not afraid to get his hands a little bloody. And in this movie, he kind of delegates that.
He's learning. Mm-hmm. He wasn't experienced in it yet. This was just the introduction.
That's a great point. If you think about it, I guess it's kind of like kind of a cult leader. You know, you get Bob Bazoon wearing purple.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Gets everyone wearing purple, rallying behind him. You know, they're painting with him.
They all had their Joker coats on.
That's right.
Yes.
You got others to do the dirty work. It's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Okay, so Anne-Marie, look at this Joker. What do you think of Jack?
This Joker. I loved it. I loved everything about his creation, his origin. Like, it was fun getting to see him go from basically just being a mobster, which not great as a mobster, to turning into the Joker. Like, I liked you see the progression with the gun backfiring and then him falling into the vat of goo and the back alley plastic surgery. And he's just like, whatever, this is who I am now. I'm going to skip out and be the Joker. I'm like, okay. He just got crazier and crazier, and then it's like Mardi Gras, and he's throwing millions of dollars in the air, and yeah.
I did enjoy how the guy who kind of set him up and it made him become the Joker was Curly from City Slickers.
I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, anytime I saw him, I was in all my notes for tonight's episode. Anytime I referenced him, I forget what the character's name was. I just wrote Curly because that was his name.
Okay.
The only reason I remember that is because the subtitle for the second one was The Legend of Curly's Gold, I believe. Okay, wait a second. Sorry,
I digress.
I'll save all that for our City Slickers podcast.
Please, no City Slickers podcast. Please.
Okay, so Jared, what did you think about that the face-off between Joker and Batman overall? And we can go ahead and get into a little bit about you know, the revelation with the Joker's involvement in Batman's origin, too, if you want.
Are you talking about the climactic showdown?
Yes. We can do that. I mean, that's until then, it's really kind of all in the Joker's head.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it's been a chase. I was scared to go into this because, you know, I watch this movie once in the face now. And
nice.
It's the one qualm I have. I'll be watching the whole movie, just enamored by it. And when it comes time for the parade, I start to go cook. You know? I'll clip the nails. I'll do other stuff because I think that scene goes on for way too long.
Oh yeah, like you know? I think there were probably about 50 shots of Jack Nicholson just like throwing money.
Yes,
over and over and over again.
Yes,
it was
sir.
So they could play more Prince music. That's why.
That's where Bruce is coming down from the air for a good 7 minutes.
Yeah.
But no, you know what? It was, you know, what's really cool is that the cathedral and the way that, that and along with all of Gotham and Tim Burton's world kind of set the tone for the future films, you know, as dark as the movie was, it wasn't, in my opinion, dark enough that when I watched it as a child, I was tormented for years. But it was such a cool tone, and how they went up from each floor to floor, and, you know, just till it gets to Jack. I thought it was really well done. A little long, but really well done.
Yeah, in
you?
I really like the final showdown. Like, my main qualm with the whole, like, last act, really, is the big revelation that the Joker was the guy who shot Bruce's parents. Just because, like, for one, it never comes up out through the entire movie. It feels almost like a last minute studio note to make everything make sense. But it doesn't really even make sense, because I don't think they ever explicitly say that the reason Bruce becomes Batman is because his parents were killed?
No,
but they, you know, I don't, how many times did they reference the newspaper clippings? I know that he looks at it and he gets sweaty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He gets amped up. So I think it's the driving force, but I don't think they ever said this is what drove him to do it.
Yeah, it just felt like you know, they put that in there just to give some closure to something.
Yeah.
You know, and to have the Joker's death mean something in the movie.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I said, you know, it just feels a little tacked on, and actually it caused me to have to combat a lot of misinformation for years, because people were like, no, in the comic books, Joker kills Batman's parents. And I'm like, no, it was a guy named Joe Chill.
Yeah.
And, but that's just a super geeky complaint, you know?
Well, it's kind of interesting how the movie lays it out. It's this guy in a bat suit starts coming out of nowhere and doing all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then 2 weeks later, this guy with clown makeup's coming out of nowhere. That, you know, there had to be some kind of parallel. And I think what it did for us is, like, they're both nuts in their own way, and they met a kid. But it did seem a little fast tracked. But at the same time, can we just talk about the guy who played the young Jack Nicholson in that flashback scene, and how accurate that was?
Oh yeah. Yeah, like picture perfect. Like, if that was in a modern film, I would have been like, oh, they CGI'd young Jack Nicholson or something like that.
They nailed it.
Oh yeah. Like, I believe I've seen like a image on the internet somewhere of that actor next to Jack Nicholson from the original Little Shop of Horrors, which was his first film.
Oh.
About the same age. And yeah, total
dead on.
Total dead on likeness. Nice. Okay, Anne-Marie, what did you think about the Batman Joker finale?
He outs himself to the Joker. He straight up says, you killed my parents and stuff like that. I'm like, I don't think he knew who you were yet.
But now he does.
Now he knows who you are, which, I mean, I know he, like, you know, throws him off the thing and he dies, but what if he hadn't? He now knows your secret identity. That's, like, against all rules for superheroes, is you never let them know your secret identity, because then they come after everybody in your life.
Well, that's a pretty pretty common in all of the... these original four Batman movies, like, every movie, at least one or two people finds out that Bruce Wayne is Batman, and it's usually one of the villains and then one of the people that Bruce is dating.
Good, we took care of that.
Yeah, obviously Vicky finds out in this film.
Good. Check mark. Check mark.
But yeah,
that's a great point, though, because, you know, Joker's death, I don't mean to spoil it if you're 30 years old and haven't seen this movie yet, but death was unintentional, right? So what was he going to do if he just arrested the guy?
Exactly.
That's a great point, actually.
Exactly. He straight up, like, gave it all up, the whole thing. I'm like, why are you even wearing a mask?
And as an audience member, as an audience member last night, not necessarily when I was a kid, but as soon as you realize that that's happened, you're like, oh, okay, he's dead. Like, because you can't, there's no other way out of that situation without stopping the Batman story in its tracks. And
well, but the way that it actually even sounds that, okay, Joker kills parents, dude becomes Batman, Batman kills dude who killed parents, game over, no more Batman. What else? I mean, why else are we, going to keep going? You got the guy.
Yeah.
How is there a sequel? There's no need for a sequel.
I kind of would have liked to have seen this Joker kind of survive, though, and maybe, you know, inspire, like, the next round of villains when he's in Arkham or something like that. And maybe just have Jack have, like, a little cameo in Returns or something like that. That would have been fun.
That would have been interesting.
That would have been great, yeah.
Yeah, but that there would have went the entire budget for the movie. So.
Yeah, just to get that cameo.
It's true.
Okay, let's see here. Next character we wanted to talk about a little bit was
the other person who figured it out.
Yeah, Vicki Vale, Kim Basinger. Basically, Vicki Vale, if you don't know, she's a comic book character, and I guess that's kind of why they chose her for this movie. But she was basically like a low-rent Lois Lane back in the 50s and 60s that I believe actually they brought her in, and then they brought Batwoman in to kind of waylay like the speculation that there was an improper relationship between Batman and Robin. From the whole Seduction of the Innocents controversy that happened back then. But, you know, she never really graduated as a character past that in the comics. And she really doesn't grow much past that in this movie either, I don't think. They also reveal in Batman Returns that she couldn't handle, like, the whole dual identity thing, and she breaks up with Bruce over it. So now there's a photojournalist out there who's just one bad year in her career away from tell-all. Bruce Wayne is Batman, right. And I slept with him.
Yeah, like, I dated Batman. There you go. You're going to make a couple million now. Like, meh.
Yeah. But, Joseph, what did you think of Vicki Vale.
Hot.
All right, fine. I'll give you that.
Right, like I'm kind of honing in on it right now. She might have been one of my top three crushes on this planet.
Nice.
At the time. So I got that thing going with her. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's like any other movie from that time for me, especially a superhero one. There hadn't been many, but you know, the guy's gonna have a love interest, and whether he's in a pre-existing relationship before we start watching the movie, or this chick shows up out of nowhere and does an article and falls in love with him just for the movie, that's fine. But, you know, I didn't question too much of it, you know. And I really did. It made sense to me. She's enamored by this millionaire when she gets to town. Millionaire at the time, right? When she gets to town and they fall for each other, and that's that.
One thing leads to another.
Yeah.
And Alfred kind of pushes them together a little bit, too.
Well, because I think he thought she would make him stop, which is weird because doesn't he help train Bruce to
In Gotham?
Yes, I'm trying to block out Gotham, which is very hard.
In Gotham, Alfred is becoming more and more of a willing participant in the mission.
And I know, in a lot of things, Alfred tries to stop him because he's like, you're going to kill yourself and fall off of something. Stop it, Bruce. But he still had to know what he was
doing.
Kind
of different.
Yeah.
To the whole thing. Oh, you're back? You want soup?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He's like, hold on, let me pick up your girlfriend and bring her to the house while you're out fighting crime. Like, what is that?
Well, I mean, the actor, he didn't have too much to throw a lot of nuance into Alfred's character because he was busy appearing in every McDonald's and Coca-Cola commercial in support of this movie and every other Batman movie in this series.
He was that guy.
Yeah.
That guy at Coke commercial.
Oh, definitely. Actually, I almost played before we started. I found a video copy, and sorry, Jared, I don't think you'll be able to hear this at all, but I found a video copy of like the commercials that were on the Batman VHS tape before the movie began. Yeah, the Diet Coke commercial with Alfred, and then a commercial with Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck advertising a mail order catalog that you had to call a 900 number.
Oh.
That was like $3.99 a minute to order.
Oh.
And I'm sure they kept you on there as long as they possibly could.
I'm sure they did.
Yeah, but
The 900 number.
This is all real. But, you know, even from the first commercial, you know, you put that VHS in, you're waiting for that WB logo to get up there, and you're ready, you know?
Actually, I'd almost completely blanked on the commercial, and then I saw I go to this subreddit on Reddit sometimes called Obscure Media, where they post a bunch of old commercials and old TV shows and stuff like that. And I saw it on there and I clicked it and I was like, oh, wait a second. I'm 7 again in that basement. And this is what I was watching at the time.
That's right. Sweet.
Okay, let's see here. Anne-Marie, I'm going to cut this one here.
That's fine. It wasn't great.
And Let's see. We had a couple more just general points we wanted to make, Jared. But first, we'll throw it to you. Anything that we haven't touched on yet that you definitely wanted to touch on about Batman?
No, man. I feel like we're covering the bases in terms of the movie goes.
Okay.
You know. Whatever hits us, I'm down.
Excellent. Okay. Well, one thing I wanted to definitely point out was I noticed a bit. This was a big trope in 80s movies, where a combination of common household items, like the chemicals, kind of mixed together to do something awful. Mm-hmm. I remember it happening in several 80s movies, kind of like a fear of the mundane kind of thing.
Right.
The movie I remember it happening best in was The Incredible Shrinking Woman with Lily Tomlin, where basically, I think it was marshmallows, bleach, and hair dye, and it makes her shrink down to like Ant-Man sized, you know, to be relevant.
to be a relevant
reference. But I just thought that was worth pointing out. That was a big trope in the 80s, and I'm not sure why. We were afraid of our common household items.
Apparently, no hairspray. Hairspray alone was fine. Yes.
If we're on it,
yeah.
The reason I don't question the Bruce and Vicky relationship as much, where did she come from, why is she here, is because Joker shook a guy's hand and electrified him, to his socks, he fell in the acid, the vial, and he's got his bones. I let some things go.
That's true.
You have a very willing suspension of disbelief.
Yes.
That's right. Yes. I was along for the ride, Now almost 30 now. Stuff bothers me when I watch it, And I'm like, this, why, But I remember just back then, the nostalgia value of it will override any, particulars for me at this point. They're all great points. Tim would look back on them and say, that makes sense. I should change that.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like you said, you watch it frequently. It's not something that you haven't watched for 15, 20 years like us. So to you, it makes more sense. You're like, no, that's just the way it always is. And here we're like, that is the 80s and that needs to die. That makes no sense. That shouldn't have happened. Like, that's my struggle walking into
it. I got the dogma.
Yep.
I will say, I interesting point, though, you say about how Tim Burton might look back on it and be like, oh, I changed this or I changed that. He talks a bit about it in the Superman Lives documentary that just came out. That's about his failed Superman movie.
And awesome.
That's right. Is that the one with Nicolas Cage?
Nicolas Cage. But he talks a bit about it. And I guess the reason he decided to do – originally he wasn't going to come back and do another Batman. But the thing is, he felt so ill-equipped to make this first Batman movie, and he learned so much while he was on it that he wanted a chance – he was like, okay, that was the test one. Let's go back and do the real one now with Returns. Now that I've learned all this stuff about how to make a Batman movie, let's apply it to – this next one here with Returns and stuff. So he probably would go back and change a
couple of things.
He's a young guy. It was super experimental for him and probably really daunting, And he wasn't necessarily a fan. He talks about that a lot, And
then why did he make a movie if he wasn't a fan? Money. Okay, fine.
Plus, I think he liked the darkness of the character.
I can see that. Okay.
He thought he could imbue Gotham City with a lot of spirally things, as Tim Burton is wont to do.
He does like spirally things. That's what I was just like, looking at his, what he's made.
Oof. Okay.
For the second movie, though.
Yes.
It was almost like, for the first movie, he tried Sambuca for the first time, And when he got greenlit to make the second one, it was like, more shots. Come on, more shots, Instead of just nursing that one drink and running with that, I think he went a little crazy with it. But even that movie has its own charm and its own purpose,
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think for Returns, I think he went maybe 10% too far with the Penguin. But DeVito played it great, though.
Love Returns. See, that's the thing. I'm actually much more familiar with Batman Returns than Batman.
Oh, really?
I probably have seen that 10 times more.
Nice.
So that one,
I got a lot of memories associated with that one too. That was Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes,
that was her introduction to my world.
Yes,
that was a big happening. And again, with the poster. the posters and the action figures and stuff like that. It's these two movies.
Oh, yeah. I remember the year that came out. When I was a kid, it was the first year for Christmas. Instead of getting us presents, my parents just gave us cash to get what we wanted. And I went and got like all the Batman Returns toys I could. Like I had Penguin's like duck boat thing and everything. Okay, Anne-Marie.
I remember looking in the Toys R Us catalog, and they had his Penguin, or his rubber ducky.
Nice.
They had his rubber ducky.
That is fantastic.
We had no money, so there was not a chance of getting that. But it was cool to see that.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Okay, Emery, you wanted to talk a little bit. You didn't like the Prince music very much.
I hate Prince. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, world. I don't like Prince. It doesn't work for me. But as if the movie wasn't so completely dated, the Prince music was killing me. It just would come in like a wave. There'd be the middle of this like dark and dreary scene, and then all of a sudden, Prince music and neon paint is everywhere. Yes. And dancing and throwing things, and a man with a gigantic boombox following the Joker around.
Well, it was the 80s. Everyone had a guy with a gigantic boombox.
I am aware of that.
Around.
And like I said, it's completely dated, and it just like emphasized that fact for me. And I'm like, please stop.
I was five, and I had a friend with a gigantic boombox.
I think I was the friend with the boombox.
Era-appropriate, Anne-Marie.
Oh, I know it was era-appropriate. I'm aware. I had, like, the white and pink girls version with the cassette tape and taping everything off the TV.
That's what the person would carry when they would be following the guy with the big boombox.
Right.
They'd be carrying
the supplemental
one.
Music. Yeah. Right.
There you go.
Yeah, I just couldn't handle it. It just felt really forcing.
I'm with you. Because I would say this. I think they made scenes around the song.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I think it was forced to sell the soundtrack, which worked, though, because you said you were obsessed with the soundtrack.
Oh, this, you, I don't know if you've heard Scandalous. Scandalous might change your mind. Scandalous a shot.
I was kind of curious in the art gallery scene, in the scene on the float, if Jack Nicholson was actually listening to the Prince music or they just like had some random track. Because I can't imagine, even though he had a really good deal on that movie, I can't imagine him being like, okay, I'll dance around to this modern pop star at that point
right.
in his career, you know? Like, but
right.
at the same time, it's a silly, big, silly character, too. So, I mean, I'm sure he expected having to be at least pretty goofy. Pretty goofy.
He was the Joker. He wasn't the serious. He was the Joker.
The jokester.
There you go.
Okay,
go ahead.
Just one little thing to wrap up here. I did notice a couple of interesting parallels with the Joker's second big screen outing, and we'll get to the third one here in a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. But with The Dark Knight, there were a few scenes that were kind of very similar, very reminiscent in The Dark Knight of this movie. First of all, Jared, you mentioned this first one when the Joker, when he comes in to take over the underworld, he goes to a room full of henchmen, more or less, and he kind of introduces himself by playing a trick on one of them that kills them. You know, in The Dark Knight, it's the pencil trick.
Uh-huh.
And in this one, it's the joy buzzer. And then the Joker's first scheme involves him killing people remotely with chemicals. Because, you know, in this one, he's doing the whole thing with the household chemicals. And then in Dark Knight, he killed, I think it's like, what, three politicians or something. He poisons them where the poison takes 24 hours to take effect. And he's like, you know, all these people will die at this time. And then they all do. And they're like, oh, they got poisoned or whatever.
Yeah.
And then lastly, it's actually, again, another scene you mentioned, Jared, when the Joker's facing down one of Batman's vehicles while standing in the middle of the street. Mm-hmm. In The Dark Knight, it was the Batmobile. And in this one, it was the Batwing.
Yeah.
So just a few little parallels there.
Bill, you're leaving one big one out.
Okay.
Joker's last season, Dark Knight, is him hanging off that building.
That's true.
Very true. Only he doesn't fall. Because he's tied there, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I believe he's hanging there by a rope. Yeah, very good point.
He's full on lost his mind at that point. Him and Bats are staring at each other. The whole deal.
Yep. Excellent. I knew there was a reason we had you on to talk about this, besides you suggesting we talk about this.
What's up?
Yes.
Okay, let's see here. Anne-Marie, we're going to go ahead and skip the ad for today, I think.
That's fair.
And we're going to wrap up talking a little bit about the new DC Comics movies offerings. We got some trailers at the Comic-Con.
So wait. We're not going to do a scale?
Oh, you know what? You're completely right.
We have to do an arbitrary scale.
Yeah, Jared, as a part of our wrap-up of a discussion of a piece of fiction, generally we do an arbitrary scale. So let's see here. I'll start with you, Anne-Marie. Out of 127 cans of Diet Coke served by Alfred, how many cans of Diet Coke served by Alfred would you give this movie?
I'm going to give this movie 103 cans of Coke served by Alfred.
Why is that?
Because it was a good movie. Like, I mean, yeah, it's completely dated and crazy, but it's still a really good movie. Mm. Ba-dum-bum.
I'm guessing.
Anne-Marie.
Yes.
At the end of the day, I think you'll agree on this. You got to give it the point that it was a template for anything dark-ish that came out after.
Oh, yeah. I'll give it that. For sure.
Okay, Jared Joseph.
Cool. Thank you on behalf of Tim Burton.
Well, I was sitting here looking through his IMDb, and I'm like, oh, it just kept getting crazier, didn't it, then?
Jared Joseph, out of 127 cans of Diet Coke served by Alfred with a straw in them, because, you know, you don't want to get a lip print on the glass, what do you give it?
You said how many?
127.
27.
127.
127.
127. Well, 128, of course. This movie shaped the man I'm becoming.
The man I'm still in the process of being.
That's right.
Nice. And as for me, I'm going to give it 127. I won't give it 128 because I don't want to feel like I'm copying Jared. I'll go ahead and translate that out to cans of regular Coke, which would be 194. So I think we can all agree.
That's fair. We enjoyed
the movie.
It was a good movie, for sure.
Okay, DC comic book film.
Okay,
Comic-Con
now we can get
trailers.
To that.
Jared, you know what? I'll let you pick. Do you want to talk Batman v Superman or Suicide Squad first?
Well, you know, let's start with the Batman Superman.
Batman Superman.
There.
Okay, well, I think to get some context before we actually get into the trailer, did you see Man of Steel? Did you like Man of Steel? What were your thoughts on Man of Steel?
I was a Man of Steel fan.
Excellent. Excellent. You're friendly then. You're not one of those guys who
has a movie. Oh, listen, I got the qualms. You know, I saw the same movie that everybody that had a problem with it saw, you know. But there was enough in it for me to enjoy it more than to, you know, be cynical about it.
Yeah.
You know, I like what they did.
Excellent. Nice. Glad to hear that. Okay, so what did you think of this big Batman v Superman trailer that came out at Comic-Con, this, like, groundbreaking, revelatory trailer?
That's when I saw that. When that thing dropped, I think I spent the whole day watching it. You know, other trailers came out later that day, but, you know, I was enamored by it. I watched it on the phone, iPad, and then back on my TV.
Mm-hmm.
And just to see what I missed, you know what I mean? I kept, you know, I didn't see the Robin suit in the first time, you know? Mm-hmm. And I want to see Bruce bulging out of that dress shirt again when he's running, you know? It's like, I watched it for different reasons each time, and I'm blown away by it, man. You know, it's kind of the thing I have an issue with is I haven't seen the Gotham world yet, but, you know, at least the Metropolis world, it's got that video game fogginess to it, mm-hmm. which I'm not crazy about. But anything like that was, you know, Bruce in his house or anything like that, it just looks beautiful. It looks like a beautiful film.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely, very interesting look at Wayne Manor there too. Looks like it's, you know, been completely a bit like burned out, abandoned, and everything. Mm-hmm. Like,
totally.
We were kind of in the same boat. We were out at Daytona Beach and kind of just like checking the phone, like, is the trailer out yet? Is the trailer out yet? Is the trailer out yet?
Yes.
Then we get back and I'm trying to find like a cell cam version of it. And then Warner Brothers just goes ahead and releases it like right after the panel.
We appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we proceeded to watch it about a zillion times.
Too,
for sure. What do you think about the whole fact that it seems like we're dealing with a Batman who's not at the end of his career, but he has been retired for a while and is kind of like maybe what we would know from the comics, like a mid-level career Batman sort of thing.
You know, I've been hugging Michael Keaton this whole phone call, but I got to say that it's going to be cool to see a Batman or a Bruce that's ripped right out of the cartoon or the comic. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I love how Big Ben got. I love the gray in the hair. I love it. I can already see the reluctancy to get back into it, you know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so much cooler than any kind of origin story, you know, again or yeah. like that. Catch this guy who's he doesn't want to do it, you know.
He's tired. He's old. He's tired, retiring.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that I think it looks promising, man. It really does. You?
Yeah, well, for one, you mentioned, you know, Bruce Wayne straight out of the comics. In the scene where he's, like, running towards the falling building, does he not remind you of Bruce Wayne from Batman the Animated Series? Like, he looks like
it, yes.
like some they used him as a model to make that character almost.
Oh, it's him. It's him, 100%.
Mm-hmm. It's the jaw.
Yeah.
He has the Batman cartoon jaw.
Ooh, in like,
but Andrew, look at that vest and that shirt. It's going to rip. And yes. he goes for a hug. That thing's going to rip.
Yes.
Also, his angry face when he's like looking at the newspaper, like you let your family die or whatever. And
yes.
then he gets that angry face. I'm like, oh.
Well, and it's the trying to figure out what all of those little things mean because we don't know this Batman yet. Mm-hmm. This is a whole new yeah. Batman. You know, yes, we have Man of Steel, whatever. I slept through the last 20 minutes, whatever. I'll watch it. But we don't have the Batman yet. This mm-hmm. is the introduction to him
yeah.
and finding out yeah. what family are they referring to. Is it his employees? Is it an actual family? Did he actually settle down and have a family? Like,
yeah, because there has been speculation with that, too, because like
the little girl.
Yeah. Yeah. The little girl and stuff like it. Maybe he had a family going on, mm-hmm. you know, around that time. Maybe they were in that building that fell, you know, maybe
yes.
that's why he quit being the Batman.
Exactly. Yeah. So many things.
I got a few questions though. I got a few questions.
All right.
Jesse Eisenberg and that hair. That's not even a full question, but that's my general question.
See, I like it.
You know, if anybody could tell me more, that'd be great.
Okay. Well, are you aware of the role that Lex Luthor's baldness played in his Silver Age origin?
I am. My only thing is that, A, it's a younger Lex, right? Like, nobody was
yeah.
really expecting that with casting rooms were starting.
Mm-hmm.
I know it ain't his real hair, but I want to see that end of the film bald take on it that that Jesse's done. But I'm just – the jury's still out for this Lex for me.
Yeah,
mostly the age, not the hair.
I'm pretty sure we're going to get that considering the first promo shot they released of him, he did have the bald head.
Mm.
Or at least it looked like
right. –
maybe not completely bald, but
back.
Mostly shaved down.
Okay.
But the thing is like, I think, you know, while he doesn't become super big enemies with Superman because of the baldness, I think it's a constant reminder to him of, well, in the Silver Age, it was basically Superman saves him from a lab explosion, but in the process, destroying a new form of life that Lex had created.
Mm-hmm.
So every time he looks at his bald head in the mirror, he sees that life form that
uh-huh.
he had created that in his mind, Superman destroyed vindictively.
Right.
And so I
guess my question is, Bill,
mm-hmm.
can he get evil?
I think
Jesse Eisenberg get evil.
I think so. I think if nothing else, he might not be like overtly like mustache twirly evil. I think his hubris will make him do evil things. Because
yeah.
he definitely comes across as a guy, and this is Lex Luthor through and through, a guy who's just – he thinks he's the smartest guy in the room because he usually is. He loves the sound of his own voice. He loves when he's clever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole the red capes are coming thing. You can hear in his voice there that he's just so pleased with himself that he kind of came up with this kind of cool catchphrase or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So
you don't sound convinced on that
no,
one.
No, you're making great points, actually. You know, and what I did see of him I really liked, but there's got to mm-hmm. be a juxtaposition by the end of the movie of, okay, he's gone full Lex,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
you know?
Oh, yeah.
And
I'm anticipating nothing less than him being like completely, you know, because the basic setup for him is he's going to be kind of like running like LexCorp's kind of like a internet startup more mm-hmm. or less, or that kind of company.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by the end of it, he's going to be disgraced, downtrodden, probably in jail, ready to break out for the Justice League movie or wherever he shows up next.
Right.
So, I kind of almost think, you know, what we see with the Robin suit in the Batcave and everything with the you know, joke's on you, Batman. Joke's on you, Batman. Aha! But I kind of think that there's going to be a secret Joker appearance at the end of this movie because I know they're still doing some reshoots on this movie and some shooting on this movie. So I could totally see them bringing in Jared Leto for like the big climactic battle because, I mean, in the comic books, anytime Batman and Superman face off, for the first time, the villains are almost always Lex Luthor and the Joker.
They have to have
yep.
the both. they have to have them both, or it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll work. It'll work. It'll be good enough. But we need to have the Joker. Yeah. We need it. We need Leto.
I want to see Jesse Eisenberg react to Jared Leto.
Yes. I want his opinion on it.
What do you think about Jared, about the whole theme of the world not trusting Superman, and Batman, you know, kind of being okay with that and maybe trying to bring Superman down a peg or two and everything?
One
what do you think
us.
About that?
I dig that, man. I really do. Well, I remember like one of the early synopsis. I don't know if they were official or whatnot. It was basically Bruce saying, "Tone it down a notch," you know, like. Mm-hmm. I've done this before. Don't make my mistakes. I think there's a big, big level of that that's going to be in the film. But I think we're going to spend a good portion of it being pretty pissed off about what happened to Man of Steel, you know? And
oh, yeah.
I think in the real world, most people would not be in favor of this guy that's going to knock your condo down when he gets, you know,
right.
when somebody jaywalks. Mm-hmm. But... I like that. Cool.
Yeah, and at the same time, it seems like they kind of have different aspects where, like, you know, while some people hate him for it, other people are worshiping him because they're like, oh my goodness, it's this God-level character who exists on our world now. We should worship him.
Right.
Why not, right? But definitely they, like, the one frame from this trailer that stuck out to me is like, okay, they're finally doing the comics as movies now. Mm-hmm. It's the protesters with like a, you know, like the God hates aliens signs
hates
and
aliens.
Everything.
Yeah.
Like that has been a very common theme in the Superman comics since the 70s.
Yeah.
Always. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my
it's an extension of the Christ parallels and, you know, mm-hmm. the minority parallels. It's just an extension on that.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, but I wish it was coming out this year like originally
yes.
planned. Like, I'm just, like, ready for it. I need Batman v Superman in my life.
I think part of the reason, like you said, they're still doing reshoots.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, there's no way they would have been able to have – it could be because of trying to pull in the Jared Leto character into mm-hmm. some of it because now they're in – aren't they into, like, main shooting of that?
Yeah, well, I think –
They should be rapping, though.
Yeah,
soon.
I almost want to say that Leto hasn't been making a lot of it. He hasn't been in a lot of the on-set pictures that they've been coming out with recently.
They're not going to want to – they're going to be hiding.
He hasn't been in a lot of the press stuff for it. So, like, I don't know if he's done on that or not, but
You know what, Bill, man?
What's that?
I this is my guess. We'll probably get a little Easter egg, you know, a little Marvel-esque end of credits.
Mm-hmm.
Get ready for a Suicide Squad kind of deal. Do you know what I mean? Or,
oh, yeah.
The next picture's coming soon. We're going to get something like that, if not a full standalone scene.
Yeah, like I could
at the very least.
I could totally see it ending with, you know, the Joker in the jail cell and then Suicide Squad opening with the Joker in the jail cell kind of thing.
Right.
Or like their first action is to like break him out or something like that. I could totally see that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we should go ahead and transition to talking about the second offering DC Comics has released a trailer for, Suicide Squad. What did you think of this one, Jared?
Again, I'm hammered. Like these film trailers come out all the time and you watch them and you kind of forget about them. And then
right.
These are 3 months later and then you go watch it or whatever.
Right.
But this, just like the one we were just talking about, is like, come to me, you know, I want it now.
Yes.
And I haven't felt that in so long. It's so, so cool, man. You know, I've been watching, you know, the films from the other universe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're great. They have their charm, but I kind of know what I'm getting when I, you know, what
right.
I'm going to get at the end. And
yeah,
I'm going to get a charming comedy, and then I'm going to go home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'm going to get with these movies, and that's what excites me, man.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like all of these movies, so far, they seem like they all have a unique voice and. Versus the other companies' movies, Marvel movies, like these definitely feel like firmly made for grownups.
Right.
Like these are not any movie you're going to watch, see a trailer for on TV and be like, oh, I could take my kid to see that. You're thinking, oh, wait a second, I want to keep my kid away from that until he's old enough to handle it.
Yes.
Yeah, and listen, I don't want to get too far off track with this point, but you know, the Nolan films were great. But at the same time, people talk about them being dark. I don't feel like they were dark. I felt like they were British. I felt like they were Bond films, you know? So in that kind of caper, they live well. But with what I just saw from these trailers, and Suicide Squad especially, is like, this is going to be sickening. Do you know what I mean? There's going to be stuff in here that rubs you the wrong way. And I haven't seen that in one of these films in a long time, man. I'm excited for it.
Oh yeah, it'll be nice to get a comic book movie that's kind of disturbing, you know, like I don't know if I should be watching this. I mean, it makes me feel I need a grown up. I need a grown up because Jared Leto's up there doing his best Shining reference.
Right.
Even Harley hanging from the cage with the you know all the towels hanging off her and stuff like that, the bandages. I'm like, that's already the darkest thing I've ever seen in my life. Look at that. You know,
oh, definitely. I'm excited. Cirque du Soleil Harley.
Yes.
What did you think about Killer Croc, how they're doing Killer Croc? Because I guess that's all practical. Like, it's mostly makeup and everything. Like, I thought it was a pretty interesting look for him. He looks almost like a retired boxer or something like that.
Yeah, I felt like his look was kind of the one that really establishes, like, what world they're going for. Because everyone else is fairly human, you know. They got their things and they got their look about them, but this is the one that, oh, this guy's like legitimately supernatural. Okay, got it. Yeah. You know, and I think that's kind of going to open up that Pandora's box for that kind of stuff. I was surprised when I first saw it, the picture prior to the trailer. Is like, okay, so he's really got something. What is it? You know, but you know, it you know, actually, there's a movie that came out years ago, man. It was Punisher Warzone. I don't know if you saw it.
I saw that one.
It was sadistic, and it had like the fluorescent lighting, and I noticed a lot of it in this movie, and people had these crazy looks and stuff like that, and you know, they kind of went unexplained. But I don't know what they're gonna do with it, but it looks cool. It could have been CGI. It could have been a guy with leprosy. I don't know.
Yeah, and I definitely think, you know, he'll definitely bring in kind of like the metahuman element to it. And then there's another character, the Enchantress, who's going to be in it, who'll bring in kind of like the magic side of the DC universe too, which I'm very excited about because that's never really been shown on film before. Because I mean, magic is like it's a big deal in the DC universe. They even had I forget the fantasy author's name, but they had like one of the premier fantasy authors come in and write like a big 1,000-page Bible of how like magic works in the DC universe. And these are the rules and these are the major players and all this stuff. But overall, like this trailer, it feels like, you know, Batman v Superman is kind of their, okay, these are the three biggest heroes, because we never really talked about Wonder Woman.
Yeah, we kind of ignored that.
Well, it seems like she's going to be in for the last battle.
Anyway. Yeah.
She does.
She looks awesome.
But, you know, but that's going to be our big kind of like play. And, you know, this is our setup for the big Justice League that we're doing in a couple years. And then I feel like Suicide Squad is coming in. And this is going to give some texture to the universe to give some more context for once we get to that Justice League. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Right. It's kind of like Amanda Waller's first lines, you know, where she says, oh, you know, it alludes to Superman opening it up for these guys. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to kind of get with back to the Killer Croc thing. It's like all that's going to be explained. It's not just this guy from this planet. There's other oddities out there, you know. I think that's cool.
Oh yeah, and that's definitely something they took from the comics too, because the post-crisis comics, because there is a bit of a history back there with like a Golden Age World War II superheroes, but they've kind of been forgotten about when Superman steps on the stage back in the Man of Steel miniseries back in the 80s, and then it's like within like a year of him showing up, all these other metahumans start popping up, and that's how the Justice League forms. So it's cool to see that they're kind of bringing it back to the comics that way. If nothing else, like both of these trailers, just it feels like the comic book DC universe I grew up with on film with real people. And I never thought
real
it was going to happen.
Real people, yay. Yeah.
Like I never thought it was going to happen. I'm so happy it is.
You pleased so far?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Like I don't think I've seen anything that has me worried like at all. I guess we should end this on Leto's Joker. What did you think of Leto's Joker overall? What do you think about the grill and the tattoos and all the controversy about those?
I trust the actor. I do. I trust the guy. You know, he's great. You know, we were talking about Joker from the beginning of this thing, and it's obviously not my Joker, you know. I'm married to Jack, you know. I'm up to any take beyond that, you know. The tattoo's not a huge fan. The grill, I get it. Maybe he has a little, you know, cannibal thing going on, but I'm just interested to see what it is. I'm not going to write anything off. I don't write anything off anymore, man.
Yeah. See, what I've been thinking with it, with the grill and everything, is just like I have a feeling, you know, if like it appears to be, if Joker killed Robin, then I wouldn't put it past old Ben Affleck to bust out the Joker's teeth, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and this is probably a little time past whenever that happens.
Right.
So that makes a lot of sense. But yeah, I'm super excited. And yeah, Leto's always had a reputation of being the guy who's kind of super sexy slash creepy a little bit.
Yes.
And kind of bad
to
be around.
Perfect definition. That is a perfect definition. Yes.
Yeah, and you know, like any actor in the world, he's had some hits and some misses, man. But you know, one thing, he goes for it every time.
Mm-hmm.
He goes for it every time.
Yeah, and I definitely feel like they're taking a lot of a Sid and Nancy kind of influence for him and Harley in this movie, which I'm super pumped about too.
That's a great point. Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess an extra long episode tonight, but
I like it.
Great conversation, Jared. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much.
And,
it's meant the world. Thanks, guys.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much. And as always, you can follow Jared on Twitter at Jared Joseph. We'll have the link in the show notes at legendsofgotham.com. Catch him on the 100 when it comes back.
Woo-hoo.
And he gets around. He's on other stuff, too. Go to his IMDb page. Stalk everything he's on. Go watch this guy.
Stalk him. Yes, that's what we want to leave people with.
Yeah,
stalk him.
Basically, we're wrapping up here. Thank you so much, Jared Joseph. Now we're going to send a bunch of stalkers after you. I hope you appreciate it.
That's all right. Anybody that wants to listen to me yell or read me yell on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. This guy must follow on Twitter. He's hilarious. I especially when it gets to be about like 4 or 5 in the morning and you're still tweeting. Those are the best ones. Those are the best ones.
Yeah.
He's like, those
I'm
are the tweets
maniac.
I want to delete.
Okay. Anne-Marie, yeah. Where can people find you online?
You can find me on the Twitters at AMDSimone.
And as for me, you can follow me on Twitter at Bill Meeks. You can follow all the podcasts we do at universebox.com. And if you want to pick up one of the superhero stories I write, you can go to dogboyadventures.com. Whole series of books. They're kind of fun. You might enjoy them.
Pretty good.
Okay. Well, I guess that
there's
about
a chest
doesn't.
Mouth.
Yeah, there's a chest mouth.
There's a chest mouth. It's creepy.
Abdominis dentia. Or
I
something
don't
like
really.
That. Okay, but we'll be back with another commentary next week, and I'm sure we'll have more commentaries and then another spoiler party
before the season starts.
We're talking about doing another charity thing. Maybe
yes,
some other
there might be
podcast.
Another charity thing with DCTV podcast. Stay tuned.
Yes, definitely. So join us next time for more
Legends of Gotham.
Thank you very much.
Turned it off as I'm
singing. I cut off the music. Sorry about
that. Now I look even more crazy than usual.